Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we'll be hearing from the three Can Be firefighters who recently returned from serving in the Camp Fire area in Northern California. Surrounded by scenes of destruction and devastation, they'll tell us all about the moments of human kindness and empathy that helped pull them through.
And we'll be introducing our newest segment, Movie Reviews, by our own Tyler Clausen. Today he tells us about a film that combines cutting social commentary with a plot centered around the forced hybridization of the human genome. Yeah, it's, complicated. But first, the news. What is Project Shakespeare? The massive Canby project comes complete with a codename and a shroud of mystery over who's behind it. Here's what we know for sure. VLMK Engineering and Design has filed plans with the city to build a 531,000-square-foot beverage warehouse and distribution facility on 42 acres owned by Trammell Crow Company, a Portland-based industrial developer. The project is located on four large lots in the northeast corner of the Pioneer Industrial Park. Planning Director Brian Brown said that when it's completed, it would easily be the largest building in Canby, and the plans point to two future expansions that would add another 112,000 square feet each. For those keeping track at home, that's a grand total of over 755,000. Forget Canby, Project Shakespeare looks like one of the biggest industrial buildings in the entire Portland metro area, perhaps even the state. Spec Development's Vista Logistics Park in Gresham is larger, for now, at 733,000 square feet, but that's spread across multiple buildings. The park's largest single building is a mere 494,464 square feet, 40,000 smaller than Shakespeare even before the expansions. The Interstate Crossroads Distribution Center, also by Spec, comes up short as well at a paltry 492,554 square feet. Project Shakespeare will be over 1,000 feet long, more than 3 football fields, and 520 feet wide, and the future expansions will add a total of 432 feet to that length. Okay, so it's big, but what's it for, and who in the world needs that much space? We know it'll be used for the storage and distribution of beverages. The inclusion of a 56,000 square foot cooler suggests perhaps beer or cider, but the plans are not specific. The plans say the facility will accommodate 242 employees working 24 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week. We'll also have over 16,000 square feet of office space and a parking lot with 389 spaces. The plans propose 62 bay doors for the loading and unloading of trucks, almost all of them along the east side of the building. The facility will be secure with a proposed 8-foot fence and security gate surrounding the truck yard on the east, south, and west sides. But who's the tenant? It could be Shakespeare himself, for all we know. We've talked to commercial brokers and other developers in the area, and everyone involved is being very tight-lipped. All we can say right now is it's somebody who plans on distributing a lot of beverages. The design plans are currently being reviewed by the Canby Planning Department, and the project is expected to go before the Planning Commission on January 14th. To see the site design plans filed with the city, visit our website, canbynowpod.com. With the return of folks from Thanksgiving break comes more information on our recent report about the apparent lack of growth in Canby's population. According to Dr. Huda Alkakot, the Population Estimates Program Manager for the Population Research Center, the population numbers remained the same between 2017 and 2018, not because there was no growth, but rather because the city did not provide the information the center needed to revise its estimates. If a city has not submitted recent data, we hold its population constant to its previously certified estimate, Dr. Alkakot says. This was the case with the city of Canby in 2018. She says the center asks city officials each year for the changes in their city's housing stock, the number of people residing in group facilities, and any new annexations that need to be accounted for. She says the survey was sent to the city of Canby by email on July 6th with a deadline of August 5th, but it was never returned. We sent 4 reminders to the city and we called them by phone, Dr. Alkakot says. Then the city asked for a paper version of the survey instead of email and we sent it, but still did not receive any response. Reached this week, City Administrator Rick Robinson said he wasn't aware that the city had failed to respond to the center's request and they had already been in touch to provide any information that would be needed. There is still time to update Canby's numbers as the center does not finalize its 2018 estimates until December 15th.
Active Water Sports, the marine dealer that was called Best Boat and Water Sports Store in the Pacific Northwest by That Oregon Life last year, has been given the go-ahead to begin construction on its brand new 29,000 square foot watercraft sales and storage facility on the corner of Hazeldale Way and Southeast First Avenue in the Pioneer Industrial Park. The project represents a major expansion for the company, which has stores in Oregon City and Beaverton, as well as a ski school at Coppert Lake in Tacoma. The new facility is estimated to hold over 150 boats, with an additional 6,000 square feet of covered space outside. The four-acre lot is one of only a few in the industrial park that carries a unique zoning of CM, which permits both industrial manufacturing uses and commercial activity. AWS owner Warren Fries started the business over 35 years ago selling water skis out of the back of his car. He later moved up to selling water sports equipment and servicing boats from a corner in his dad's Napa Auto Parts store. Despite these humble beginnings, AWS is now the largest wakeboard and water ski shop in the Pacific Northwest and has long been a leader in the industry. At Monday's Planning Commission meeting, Fries said that he had been looking all over the Portland metro area for a location to expand his business and better serve his customers. But he's glad to have found a home in Cambie, admitting that the decision was a personal one for him.
We're a family-owned business. I still own 24 acres of property on Molina Road that my grandparents, my grandfather had the same name as I do, Warren Fries, when he bought on Molina Road, 1937, so I'm excited to be. I wish my dad or my grandfather was alive to see this project, but I'm hoping you vote for it.
The project's site design review application was unanimously approved by the Cambie Planning Commission. The new facility is expected to open in the fall of 2019.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Cambie Center. Don't let the Grinch sneak up on you this holiday season. If you think someone is thinking about suicide, assume you are the only one who will reach out. Listen to them. Ask directly, are you thinking about suicide? Stay with them. Help them connect to support such as a doctor, therapist, or emergency room. Call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Start a conversation. It could save a life. Brought to you by the Cambie Suicide Prevention Task Force.
The Camp Fire was the most destructive wildfire in California's history and the deadliest fire in the U.S. since 1918. It killed at least 88 people, ravaged 150,000 acres, and destroyed over 18,000 structures, including nearly 14,000 homes, most of them in the city of Paradise, which was practically burned to the ground. On November 9th, three Cambie Fire District firefighters were part of a Clackamas County Interagency Task Force, dispatched to California by Governor Kate Brown to support the personnel still fighting to contain the out-of-control blaze and provide relief to the hundreds of thousands who had been displaced. They came home on November 19th, 10 days later. This is their story.
My name is Travis Lowley, and I've been with Cambie for about 6 months, and I've just been living in the area for about 15 years now, in the Portland area.
Yeah, my name is Austin Holmes. I volunteered here for about 5 years, and I've been employed for the last two, and I was born and raised in Cambie.
I'm Jason Warner, and I was born and raised in Cambie as well. I volunteered 2.5 years with Cambie, and then I was hired on. I've been with them for 12 and a half years.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you guys just got back this week from serving in the Camp Fire region in Northern California. Thank you for doing that. How tired were you when you got back?
I was pretty tired, yeah. A lot of work down there.
Down there for 10 days?
10 days total, yeah.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Yeah, it was tired. A lot of sleepless nights. We were working 24-hour shifts, so a lot of that, we didn't get much sleep at night. And if we did, it was trying to get sleep, you know, outside where it was about 35 degrees or in the cab of a truck, which was pretty uncomfortable. So it was just a very busy time, not a lot of rest.
Yeah.
And they were able to get 2 days off before going back to work. I got 1 day off.
So you're not bitter about it or anything?
No, not at all. But when I got back, on shift, I thought, oh, you know, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
But about lunchtime after that first shift, I was feeling pretty drained.
Yeah. Yeah. You got back really late that Monday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we got back about 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the type of work that you were doing down there?
The first half was doing fire suppression. Mm-hmm. We were kind of on the leading edge of the fire, and so we were trying to cut the fire off, doing some back burning and other tactics like that, and mm-hmm. then just fire watch in general,
yeah.
protecting houses that hadn't burned yet.
Yeah.
And then the last half was surveying burned out structures for animals or people that have died yeah. in the fire.
Yeah, and if I remember right, I don't know if you remember, but when you guys were sent down there, I think the fire was only 20-25% contained or so, or maybe not even that much. It was yeah. still raging.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty minimal at that point. By the yeah. time we left, it was about 65% contained.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like down there?
It was pretty surreal. You know, you hear about this stuff on TV and in social media, and you see it.
Yeah. But some of the pictures are unbelievable. Yeah.
And I personally have never been on a conflag before, so it was my first one. So it was something new for me. Mm-hmm. And it was just a completely different experience to be there and actually see it. At some points, it felt like we were just on a completely different planet almost. You mm-hmm. know, it was pretty desolate. And then at other times, it was pretty peaceful beside the smoke. So,
yeah. Yeah. What about for you, Austin?
Yeah, when we went down there, I mean, a lot of places, it just looked like a bomb went off. I mean, there was places where there was nothing left of buildings except a small pile of rubble.
Oh, my gosh.
Trees almost looked fossilized if there was anything left of them.
Yeah.
And then just being in the outlying towns like in Chico, which hadn't really burnt, but just that's where everybody was displaced to. And, you know, we would go into a store to try to pick up a few things that we needed. And,
yeah.
I mean, you couldn't even find a pair of socks in a Walmart because everybody had just, you know, taking everything.
And, for sure.
And that was crazy. And then just the amount of looting down there from people that, you know, were going into structures that people evacuated from and were trying to steal their things. And there was fire trucks getting broken into in certain spots. So it was just a very post-apocalyptic kind of experience.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Did you sort of feel unsafe when you're obviously fighting the fire and even when you're not in that kind of situation?
We felt okay, but just we definitely knew that we were kind of in that atmosphere and
yeah.
in a completely different experience than what we've ever really yeah. been in before.
Yeah. What about for you, Captain? Any thoughts?
Like he said, just the last day we were there, we were going through some burned out structures up on this ridgeline.
Yeah.
And to walk out on the edge and look through this ravine back up over another hillside mm-hmm. to see that much destruction and how much heat was involved to just clear out everything,
yeah.
you know, all the vegetation completely was something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a fair amount of burned out areas, but this was completely different.
Yeah. Yeah.
The amount of heat that had to have been involved.
Yeah, for sure.
And then when we were in the stores, you know, we met some of the people
that were affected.
Yeah. And we talked to a few families.
There's hundreds of thousands of people displaced from
right,
this one fire, and there were a couple others at the same time.
And you could see the look in their eyes.
Yeah.
The disparity that they're going through, that they didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether their house was burned or not. They kind of
yeah.
thought, well, our house is kind of an area that hadn't been burned, but it was on the edge that was burned.
Yeah.
And the pain that you could see in their eyes of not knowing how to move forward, whether they were okay
yeah.
or they needed to start rebuilding from scratch.
Right.
was worse than knowing one way or the other.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I've never been a firefighter, but I imagine you obviously expect you're going to see fire, you're going to see destruction, you're going to see people in pain, but do you feel like you really weren't prepared for some of the things that you saw down there? It sounds like maybe you might say that.
I didn't really know what to expect, and mm-hmm. like I said, I had never been to one of these, so
right.
So I felt like I was fairly prepared, but then again, like once I got there, I was like, wow, this is way bigger than I thought, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we're used to local stuff here to where we see tragedy on a pretty small scale. You
right.
know, it's one family that has a house fire or, you know,
yeah.
a medical event that somebody has. But, I mean, to see it on such a large scale was nothing that I've ever
yeah.
seen
yeah.
before.
You sort of get, not inoculated, but you sort of get used to that. That's kind of your baseline
yeah.
of one family or maybe a couple of families affected, and now you're dealing with thousands.
Yeah, yeah. It was insane.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and to see that the parking lots of those box stores, Walmart, Target, start getting flooded with the people that were recently homeless. Yeah. And just to see those tent cities start building and building. And it was nice to see the community there donating clothes, just laying clothes out in the parking lot for people to be able to grab and take as they needed. Was nice to see the community involvement to help those that are affected.
For sure, for sure. I've heard from some other firefighters and other, you know, on TV and stuff, other interviews that people have done where they had moments with people down there. You mentioned seeing the people in stores and whatnot that had been affected. But they had moments where they just had this sort of outpouring of appreciation from the people, you know, as firefighters coming down there to help them. Did any of you experience that or have experiences like that?
Yeah, I mean, we would go somewhere to, you know, to go grab a bite to eat or something, and people would be wanting to pay for our meals and stuff, and they just lost everything.
Right.
Yeah, they're wanting to buy us a meal, and it's, you know, we don't need that. Like, we want to help them.
Yeah,
they're still just very appreciative of us being down there. And, you know, we would talk to them, and they'd ask where we were from, and they couldn't believe that we were all the way from the Portland area down there helping them. So there was a lot of appreciation, and they were very thankful, regardless of the fact that they just lost everything they owned.
Yeah,
so it was pretty incredible to kind of see that kind of humanity with them. So
yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It was nice to... there was a couple families that had ties to Canby, whether they had relatives from Canby or they themselves were from Canby.
Yeah.
So they felt like a little touch of home had come to help when we were down there. They came and talked to us and said, hey, we moved from Canby, or we have relatives in Canby.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah,
to find small world, right?
Right.
Okay, so obviously, you know, be as vague as you need to, but the second part of the work that you're doing down there, the digging through the wreckage, helping, you know, find bodies, or hoping to find bodies, how do you get through something like that?
I just take it one property at a time, one building at a time. You know, we're part of our job is medical, and so we're kind of trained to deal with death.
Sure.
And so we were expected to see that, and fortunately we didn't.
Oh, okay.
Some of the other people that were with our group, not our group, but departments and another group, did see some of that.
Yeah.
But we saw animals and stuff that didn't make it.
Yeah.
And
But
unfortunately, no people.
Yeah, for sure. But even just going through the homes, obviously you see the wreckage of these people's lives. That must be hard, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was amazed by how little there was left.
Yeah.
And, you know, we thought being able to go through a burnt home or whatever, we would find, you know, all sorts of little objects or trinkets or things that made it through, and really everything was destroyed. The only things that really survived were maybe like a cast iron stove or things that were cast.
Yeah.
Everything else was just completely obliterated, melted. I mean, there were piles of melted metal of just where car wheels used to be, and I mean, nothing made it. It was in the same form that it was
where a car had been, or the wheels.
Yeah, the car wheels would melt, and then there would just liquid piles of metal that had rehardened, and then on the ground. I mean, there was nothing left.
Yeah, even though they said the fire was moving 800 yards a minute, 8 football fields a minute.
It's so large.
It takes a while to get through. The heat that was with it to melt aluminum wheels was tremendous.
One of the buildings we went through that they had already had out all their like Christmas figurines, and they were like porcelain, so they weren't melted, but they were kind of a lot more brittle than what they would be. But
From the heat.
And it was, you know, pretty sad to see that like this family was, you know, getting ready for the holidays, getting their stuff out, and then
just
this happened, and they have nothing left. You know, but you know, as we were going through, if we'd find things that had survived and weren't broken or whatever, we'd kind of just pick it up and put it along the edge of the foundation of the house, so that whenever they do return, they can see, you know, find some things that they might be able to salvage for themselves.
That's
or
so
whatever.
Cool. Yeah, so cool that you did that. Okay, so last question. Are there any sort of impacts, positive or whatever, that you feel like, you know, is something that you're going to take away from this experience? Is obviously, you know, so much that you experience, maybe you still need some more time to reflect, but feels like something that would definitely last for quite a while.
Well, I still haven't taken it all in.
Yeah, for sure.
Like you said, it's something I'd still in processing.
Yeah.
And
probably be doing that for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm still at the point of feeling bad for the community. And
yeah.
Just, I mean, they've been through this now, and now they have the rain coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just going to make things 10 times worse.
Yeah.
Of trying to recover. And it's still cold down there. So right. Now they're wet and cold.
Right.
And right. Have nothing to go
anything
back to.
Anything that wasn't completely destroyed by fire is now in danger of rain and floods.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so
they're going to have massive landslides, I'm sure, just like
from the trees.
What happened last year with the fire last December. I mean, they kind of had all the fire happen, and then with all the big rains a few months later, they had people die in massive landslides. So I'm sure that could happen again. But yeah. I mean, just looking back, it's feeling bad for what happened, but feeling glad that we were able to do something mm-hmm. and have some sort of part of it and help.
For sure, yeah.
So that is pretty cool, and it wasn't a great experience to have, but it was a good experience just to see and be a part of it, and be a part of it in a positive way.
Was
good, and that's what I like to look back on.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for that. Yeah. Any final thoughts?
Just being there and seeing what had happened, and then coming back just before a holiday, it's kind of like really made me feel how grateful and thankful that I am and mm-hmm. that we are to that we have a home to go back to, you know.
Yeah.
And it was, as they said, it was a super great experience as far as being able to be in a place where we can go and help and try to just give these people a little glimpse of hope
Cool. No, that makes total sense that would bring that home to you. And thanks for sharing that, because I think it was a good reminder for us as well. You know, we didn't actually see, but obviously we should remember, you know, that could be us, you know, as well. So thank you guys so much for sharing. And thank you for obviously what you did down there.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
To see a video montage from this interview produced by Canby Now contributor Hannah Ray Lambert, visit our YouTube channel by going to youtube.com and searching Canby Now. Don't forget to subscribe.
Welcome to the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight, where we showcase businesses that strengthen and add value to our local community.
Hi, my name is Andrea Merrifield, and I am the owner of Park & Lou Boutique.
What is Park & Lou Boutique?
It is a small boutique, and we carry women's clothing, accessories, and small gift items due to the community and their need for gifting items since our beloved Parsons closed down.
Mm. Oh, for sure. And there's some holiday coming up where folks might be looking for gifts in the local area. I believe I've heard that.
Yes. So we
a small holiday.
Yes. Right now in stock, we do have a lot of items for Christmas, including Christmas decor.
That's cool. Andrea, part of the fun about Park & Lou is it's sort of like a scavenger hunt to try and find you guys, right?
Yeah. So I've been told.
So yes. Where are you located, and how can folks find you?
We're actually across 99E on South Ivy, just behind Ace Glass and Canby Auto Import, adjacent from 7-Eleven, or the gray Quonset Hut building with the pink door.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks, Andrea.
I'm writing this review with images in my mind that I think will be there for a while. As I continue to analyze this movie for criticism, I'm left with a critical analysis of our culture, our history, and a possible future. Sorry to Bother You is a movie that I had expectations for when I went to sit down and watch it, and those expectations were shattered. And I was quick to realize that this is a modern-day sci-fi parable with ample to teach and reflect on. Sorry to Bother You is a movie about a young man, Cassius Green, who is hard up for work. The film begins with showing us his desperation for the job we as the audience will quickly understand to be the bottom of the barrel. He fights his way through the slough of dead-endedness that is his career and strives for the promotion to the top, literally. He quickly becomes the top salesman at the telemarketing company and moves to become a power caller, where Green earns top dollar and the lifestyle he always wanted. Along the way, his friends begin a union for the company employees, and his girlfriend prepares for her gallery opening. These relationships become strained when Green must start becoming someone new to live up to his potential, even to the point of a very passive-aggressive argument between Green and his best friend. All while in the background of the world that they live in, an unrest for human inequality and psychopathic-like disregard for life begins to boil. Green is quickly taken out of his comfort zone and tossed into the fray with a meeting between he and a CEO that wants his help. The third act of this movie takes the world that we are introduced to and spins it on its head, giving a gritty and sometimes stomach-dropping experience that leaves viewers with questions of, what just happened? And, did you just see that? The ability of the cast and crew to legitimize and demean the extraordinary situation that Green finds himself in is so good that it almost goes without notice, which is almost the point, of course. We walked through the experience of Green being poverty-stricken, and not just himself, but the people around him that he loves. We feel the pain that he feels when he says, 40 on tank 2, then hands the gas attendant 40 cents, because that's all he's got. We hate him when he chooses his company over his friends, the people that propelled him to get the job in the first place. We scream with him when he sees a horror beyond compare and realizes that he might be closer to it than he thinks. Sorry to Bother You is a well-written, well-produced, and well-directed and well-acted piece of art that belongs on a list of classics such as The Island of Dr. Moreau, The Time Machine, 1984, and Frankenstein.
So, Tyler, I feel like we have arrived as a podcast and as a news media outlet, and it's not because Dark Horse Comics replied to one of our tweets, although that did happen this week. But that's not why. It is exciting. But that's not why.
Right.
The reason we have arrived is because, for the first time this week, we got called hashtag fake news.
Fake news. We're up there with the big dogs.
Multiple times.
Fox News, yeah. CNN, Can Be Now podcast.
All of them, right?
The top three.
Just the three worst offenders.
Welcome to the No Spin Zone.
This is Bill O'Reilly coming at you.
I'm sure we're offending half of our listeners. I'm sure we're offending just all half. Of our listeners.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, so this is the Can Be Now Soapbox. We are talking about a few things, but right now we're talking about one of our stories.
And let's.
Is this our first correction, by the way?
I think this would be our first correction. And
I don't
let's
think
go.
So.
Oh, really?
No, but go ahead.
I was just going to say this is our soapbox. And the reason why I'm reiterating this part is because it pertains. This is our opinion. This is not the news. So take it with a grain of salt, always, because we're generally
bucket
wrong.
Of salt.
A big old bucket of salt. Just go to the ocean, get some seawater, and just that's...
Is that the best way to get salt is from the ocean?
Let it dry out.
You can go to Costco.
What you got left, that's the amount of salt that you have with us. It's because we found out that the new segment we did about the population change in Canby was wrong.
No.
Well, we didn't have all the facts.
It wasn't wrong, but our analysis of it was our speculation. So the fact wasn't wrong. The number was the same.
Okay.
But the reason for it that we speculated on was we were wrong about.
We speculated that it was because people were dying as much as coming
in. We thought that it just hadn't changed.
Right.
And you know, so here's the thing. I've been thinking about this a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people said, like, obviously, like, it was stupid of us to publish. We should have just waited or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we did the right thing because I think what happened was really cool. Mm-hmm. And it's something that could have never happened, like, in my experience at a newspaper.
Sure.
Because what we basically saw was a story
that evolved between us and all the people that we're communicating with out in the community in real time.
Yeah.
It was so exciting.
Yeah.
And the Population Research Center was like in touch with us, sending us emails, and they were really supportive and really happy that they were getting coverage and, and that people were like, basically, because they wanted the numbers from Canby.
Yeah.
And what we did and what the community did in coming on board with it made that happen. Mm-hmm. Canby was like, you know, we don't really know what happened. It wasn't on purpose that they didn't want to send the numbers in. It sounds like people might have just got overloaded or something. We don't know what happened. But they did
want...
Yeah,
we're not going to speculate.
That's how we got in trouble last
time. At least for a month.
Yeah, no more speculation until we do it again. But
yeah,
but yeah, the city wants it. The population, the city was appreciative of it.
Yeah.
Rick Robinson, the city administrator, thanked us for getting it on his radar. And we got some really nice comments from Councillor Greg Parker as well, who was involved in the discussion. He actually was really involved with the discussion. He looked up the... like the mortality rates for Canby and was posting those as part of the comment thread. So, that kind of brings up that, like, yeah, we were wrong in saying that the numbers just hadn't changed. And part of this, I do feel like maybe something the Population Research Center should think about is, like, maybe italicizing the numbers or something.
Yeah.
That so just so there is some kind of distinction. But I'm not going to blame them. Like, you know, we could have waited, and that's what we would have done at the newspaper. Like, we would have waited weeks and weeks, and by the time that anybody heard about the story, like, it would have just been like, oh, you know, a month ago, this thing was wrong, but now it's fixed. And it wouldn't have been a story. It wouldn't have been this cool thing that happened that we were a part of.
Hashtag population gate.
Yes, thank you. Hashtag population gate. Hashtag fake news. So, yeah, and that's just something that we're able to do as a podcast, being much more, much smaller, which is sometimes a challenge, but also makes us a lot more nimble and able to do this kind of stuff in real time.
And the fact that we're not going to stand here and, you know, I was having a blast reading through all the comments. And when people were like, fake news, and this is ridiculous, that sort of stuff. Like,
I think a lot of them were kind of joking with it, too.
I know that they are. And I think that's great. And I think that, you know, we're not going to be like, well, we're the Canby News Podcast. Tell us we're wrong.
We're
like,
infallible.
You know, we're figuring this out. But we are able to take that and turn it into even more of a story and work with it. So I think that this has been an example of how Canby can influence the podcast itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just a listener,
the podcast can influence Canby.
Exactly. If you're just a listener and you think, you know, that we're sitting in some
big
studio and we're just coming up with stuff. It's like, that's not how this works. We're a part of Canby and we want you guys to be a part of the podcast. So
yeah.
Just go and look at that if you didn't and see how much you as Canby affected this story. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I was also going to say about Councillor Parker is just that, like, there's so many people like him that are basically like, no, we still believe it didn't change. Like,
oh, really?
Not really. Like, he knows it probably changed, but like the reasons that we actually did go forward with the story because things people were saying and evidence that was coming up was starting to make sense that maybe Canby's not growing. Stuff that we talked about on the podcast as far as declining birth rates, aging population, which is statewide, and then some of the things particular here to Canby that maybe the housing market has kind of priced out a lot of the younger couples. The enrollment for the Canby School District is declining.
Yeah.
So there was evidence that maybe something. It is relatively flat.
Yeah.
Probably not exactly the same.
The exact
but
same
when the numbers do come out, which probably will happen here in the next month,
we'll probably see that.
No speculation, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is lower than what we're seeing around the rest of the county.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, I still stand with what I said in that of basically, you know, it's something how I felt with me and Becca is when we look for a house, it's probably not going to be in Canby just because the way that the Canby market is with houses, it's impossible for a young family to really stay in town.
I also loved all of the people, like so many people that their only comment on the story was like, that's wrong, I moved here this year. Or I had a baby, so obviously it should have been up by one. Like, I'm sorry, that's so sweet, but that is not how it works.
That's not how it works. The whole point of this is if, as new people come in, other people are leaving or dying.
There's addition and subtraction going on at the same time.
But that's not, we're not going to get into the nitty-bitty of the of each individual comment. I enjoyed seeing people who said that. It's great to see how many people are saying that they've moved into town. I mean, it's great to see people saying they've had kids. That's always a good blessing. So, sometimes, you know, I'm not going to argue with that.
And I just wanted to wrap this up. A really good comment, I thought, that kind of wrapped everything up. This was from Warren Holzum, a member of the Can Be Now group, a guy I know. He's really cool. As it turns out, new data wasn't – this is somebody responding. New data wasn't submitted, so they just copied the old data. So there is likely to be a change, but just because there are more households doesn't mean that the population changed in parallel, because that's something a lot of people are saying, like, look at the development.
There's more houses, more buildings.
Flat population growth isn't impossible nor improbable with the demographic changes that have been occurring. I just thought that was a good comment.
That's a good one.
We'll see.
All right, man.
Stay tuned.
Any other feedback? Anything else going on with our podcast and such?
Well, so we're coming to a really busy season. We're about to have upcoming events, and there's just a ton going on.
Santa Claus has to be in two places at once,
y'all. Don't spoiler. Hashtag spoilers. I like that part. We didn't even fit everything in because there's just so much going on. But we're going to be busy. Canby's going to be busy. It's going to be fun time. And it's exciting. We have a snowman that's going to be hitting the streets. I'm not gonna spoil that. Wait till you guys see the little trick that we did with our snowman. It's pretty cool. And sports is coming back. You'll be excited about this.
Good old sports.
He's so excited.
Yeah. Sports dun, and
dun 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 dun.
Sports and you know. Building permits and codes.
All your favorite
things. This is all my favorite stuff, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We did have some feedback.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I just got an email. I want to read this from somebody who knows Rick.
How come nobody's emailing me? Tyler at canbe.
I'm not going to say who it is because I don't have permission. But
Is it canbenow.com or canbenowpod.com?
canbenowpod.com.
Okay, Tyler at canbenowpod.com. I have not gotten an email, so
somebody email
me,
Tyler.
Please, and don't just be Frankie as a disguised email. Right. Be someone for real from Canby. Tyler at canbenowpod.com.
This went to my personal email because it's somebody I know.
Ooh.
But he knows Rick, the guy that was covered in our last episode. Told a story about finding a sister 60 years later. It was an awesome story. If you haven't heard it, you guys should definitely check that out.
Yeah.
He just said, listened to Rick's story today and loved it. Well done. Learned things I wish I had known about Rick when he was still here. By the way, he just moved.
Oh.
Which is sad. But that's one reason we wanted to get a story
out
there.
Get it out there, yeah.
And he said, keep up the good work. So thank you for that person I'm not going to name.
All right. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for the feedback and for getting to us. Please.
I have more.
Oh, there's more?
Yeah. No, that was one that just.
Last time you were like, there's one person talking to us. That's great.
Yeah, I got a bunch. That one just came in, so it was in a different spot.
Everybody erase my outro in your brains.
Okay. So this came in on Podbean. If you are a follower of us or subscriber or you have the Podbean app, you can comment on there.
My mom is a constant
commenter a few times. Podbean. So this is from Rachel. She said she posted two comments. She said on one episode, this was episode 7, which I called Handin Hanlon. You did not like that episode name, but it was our interview with Mary Hanlon, the developer of the Dallas. She said, thank you for that. So interesting. Thank you for the interview with Mary Hanlon.
Nice.
And then on a different episode, she just says, enjoying your history segments. So thank you for that, Rachel.
All right.
We do like the history segments. We need to get back
in. Yeah, we need more of them. Yeah, we do. I got to get some more music for those guys.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
I've got one in the works to wrap up our fire series. It's just, they do take a lot of time to
they
write.
Do. Yeah, it's like writing a whole essay.
It really is. And this is a text from Rick, from the guy.
Ooh, says, Rick. Okay. Yeah.
He says, I've listened to the podcast and found it. He's like, this is funny, just because he's like an older guy and like kind of has that military man way of speaking. So,
okay.
Yeah. I've listened to the podcast and found it very well done. My nieces and nephews, as well as the rest of my siblings, are happily overwhelmed.
Nice.
He's a super nice guy. I love him. I'm so sad that they moved away. But.
Yeah. Stay in Canby, everybody.
Well,
everybody stay in Canby so our numbers can grow.
I think it was.
That's so cool.
I think it may have been related to the story you told, to be closer to some family. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So that's cool. Yeah, that's fair. That's a one fair reason that you can move away.
Yeah. All right. Here comes my outro again. Guys, if you are interested in getting your feedback on our show, then just comment on Facebook or on our everything. You can
email. But I don't like to comment. Why should I do that? Why should I even do ratings or reviews?
Are you doing a bit right now? Is that what's happening?
I'm like a hypothetical,
yeah,
like grumpy listener.
It helps us a lot. Like, it helps if you guys comment. It helps us know that we have listeners. If you guys leave a review and rate us on your applications or on Facebook and stuff, you have no idea how much that helps us. It gets us in everybody's face. So please do that. And
it fills our hearts with so much joy.
It really does. And even if you're just calling us fake news,
we love it.
You can also email
you're
us.
Listening.
You can email Frankie at, do you like the info?
info@canbynowpod.com.
And remember, I'm lonely over here. I just got my new email. Nobody's emailed
somebody
me.
Somebody throw him a bone.
Tyler at canbynowpod.com, please.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That please is not part of it. That's me begging.
.com, please? It got sent back. Wait.
I won't hit the button. Okay. All right.
What do you think is going to go in Project Shakespeare? Don't say water park.
Oh, you just... You just took me out of the knees,
man. No, don't say water park. You can't say water park because we know
in Portland metro area, and you don't want me to say water park.
We already know what's going in it, sort of.
All we know is beverage stuff. That could also be water for water parks.
What's a big cooler for?
A cold hot tub. I don't know.
You could fit.
I just think it's going to be like a Rogue.
You could
or
fit
like
about. About 12 of my houses inside of that cooler.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a massive.
Yeah, I think it's
going to
be like a Rogue or some sort, like a Windmere Brothers sort of. They've got like a whole block and a half in Portland. So
the big, again, this is not reporting. This is just people talking on Facebook. But the prevailing theory is actually maybe Columbia Distribution, which is a really large beverage distributor. I think they're Oregon based. I don't know too much about them, but I guess they just bought another brewery in Oregon and maybe one in Washington as well. They're based out of Swan Island Development Park up in Portland, which is pretty crowded, I guess, for them.
Yeah.
And,
all of Portland's crowded.
Yeah. Well, that development park in particular. And yeah, apparently some people on Facebook think that that would make sense. I've heard that a lot from a lot of people. So that seems to be the prevailing theory from folks I'm listening to.
Yeah.
So, but again, anybody official that is not saying anything. Nothing. So we know nothing is very mysterious. Could be Shakespeare.
Yeah. All right, third outro.
It would be hilarious if it was just like a theater company. It turned out to be like, surprise.
They're just like, this is how we give beverages to our audience.
Yeah, the cooler is just like, hey, we like to drink. Like, sue us. You know? After a good performance, we like to tie one on.
All right, third outro.
Okay.
Your turn. I already did it all. You just say goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Upcoming events this weekend, the busy holiday season is officially underway. The Red Mitten Christmas Bazaar is open this weekend and the next. At 10100 Southeast New Era Road, handmade gifts, children's items, candles, home decor, and more will be on display. All made by dozens of unique local crafters. Hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday and Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, and noon to 5 on Sunday. Admission and parking is free. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday and 10 to 3 on Saturday, Swan Island Dahlias will be open for 2 days of shopping at its holiday open house. Their gift shop is full of one-of-a-kind, handmade Oregon gifts, and you'll get 20% off your entire purchase if you bring two or more non-perishable food items or an unwrapped new toy. And more shopping on Saturday at the Canby Adult Center. It's Holiday Bazaar from 9 a.m. to 3. In addition to holiday shopping, there will be fresh baked cinnamon rolls and hot lunch for purchase. On Friday at 6:30 p.m., it's family night at the Canby Public Library. Parents and children of all ages are invited out for pine cone crafts. Don't know what those are, but I'd love to find out. And
All the materials are provided thanks to the generosity of Friends of the Library. Gwen's Coffee House will be hosting a special guest from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. as Santa Claus himself stops by for free pictures with kids as well as adults who haven't, you know, lost their Christmas spirit. Also, Santa's bringing the cookies and the hot cocoa for once. It's about time. Lazy Santa freeloader eating all my cookies. Santa will also be doing pictures at the Canby Depot Museum on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wait a minute. That's the same time. How's that possible? How can one man be in two places at once? Anyway, the pictures are free and donations are accepted. Pets are also welcome and refreshments will be served. And finally, from 1:30 to 3:30 Saturday, stop by the Book Nook for a real treat. It has the local author William Burt, who will be doing a reading and signing of his new book, The Creation Seekers. To see all the latest events in Canby and surrounding area, or submit your own, visit canbynowpod.com/calendar. And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Captain Jason Warner, Austin Holmes, Travis Lawley, and the Canby Fire District. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
You definitely won't want to miss Monday's episode. We'll be talking with Aaron Crawford, a Seattle-based rising star on the nation's country music scene. He and his band are widely recognized as one of the premier country music acts in the Pacific Northwest. And next week, they'll be bringing their show to Christmas at the Grove, right here in Canby.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on a program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website, canbynowpod.com.
Thanks for listening.